This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. More than half of America's grade school students use Google education apps like Gmail and Google Docs. Tech companies are transforming classrooms. They use an array of fancy marketing techniques to court and cultivate relationships with school officials. The goal? To make sure their brand dominates. But to what end for our kids? A study from 2015 found that students who use computers a lot at school often do worse than kids who don't, even when you factor in socioeconomic factors. Do these digital resources actually help students learn? And how do schools decide between spending on software and devices and spending on teachers? Just a few of the questions we'll get to ahead as our education series Enrolled continues this week. Stay close.
Support for 1A and the following message come from American Express. These days, keeping up with everything in the news is hard, whether it's politics or pop culture. American Express believes it's always easier to stay ahead when there's someone behind you. Easier to focus on what matters, to follow what interests you, to explore, to discover. And with American Express, you don't have to go it alone because they have your back. Don't live life without it.
Hey, this is Stretch Armstrong.
And this is Bobbito Garcia, the hosts of What's Good.
We're kicking off a new season with legendary singer-songwriter Erykah Badu.
That's why they call me Fat Belly Bella, because they never know when I'm going to be impregnated.
Subscribe now.
Joining us to discuss it is Natasha Singer, a technology reporter at The New York Times. Natasha, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Hal Friedlander, the CEO and co-founder of the Technology for Education Consortium. He is the former chief information officer for the New York Department of Education. Hal, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Jesse Woolley Wilson is the chair, CEO, and president of Dreambox Learning, an education software company. Jesse, thanks for joining us.
Delighted to be here.
And Darren Elwine is the principal of Harrisburg South Middle School in Harrisburg, South Dakota. He was the National Association of Secondary School Principals Digital Principal of the Year in 2017. He's coming out with a new book next year called The Revolution, about how the K-12 education landscape is changing. Darren, welcome to 1A.
Thank you. Excited to be on here.
Natasha Singer, let me start with you. I'm sure that technology has transformed classrooms in so many ways. You could just spend an hour just describing them all. Are there one or two big ways that kind of form the framework for the conversation? Like, where are the changes the largest right now?
Well, I think one of the large changes has been driven by Google, which put out these Chromebooks, which are low-cost laptops. And so you've seen over the last 5 years school districts buy these laptops in bulk. And when you go into a Google district that has Chromebooks, every student has their own laptop. And so you're seeing a lot more use of laptops, and you're seeing a lot more independent work of students researching by themselves, going online. So it's enabled the technologization further of public schools.
We should be clear, a Chromebook is basically a laptop that's designed essentially to live entirely on the web. I mean, you can buy a Chromebook for less than it would cost you to buy an iPhone.
Right. I mean, right now there's Chromebooks that are $175 or less, and the software resides on the cloud, and your documents are stored on the cloud. And what that means for schools is any kid can pick up any laptop and within 10 seconds access their own documents. You don't have to have your own laptop for yourself.
Natasha, for folks who haven't spent a whole lot of time in classrooms lately, how might someone who hasn't walked into a grade school classroom in the last 15 years, how might someone be shocked at how different classrooms look today in terms of the kind of technology that's in the room these days?
Well, I'll give you two examples, because school districts think of themselves now as a Google district or an Apple district or a Microsoft district. So Chicago Public Schools, the third largest school district in the United States, has bought something like 120,000 Chromebooks. And if you go into an eighth grade class, you see each child with a Google device, and some will be using Google Docs, which is the Google writing program, and some will be using Google Sheets, which is the spreadsheet program, and some will be collaborating using Google Drive, which is where you can share documents. And so that's one example. And another is, if you look at Baltimore County Public Schools, which is the 25th largest school district, they've gone with HP laptops and Microsoft software. And if you go into fourth grade, you see see kids scattered all over the place with their devices, and some might be in the hallway working, and they're wearing headphones, and they're doing reading exercises, and they're videotaping themselves reading, and then the teacher's getting the video and going over that, you know, and other students are doing their research projects, and so you see that different students are doing different things and sitting on beanbags. It's not like people are sitting at their desks with their pencils or even with their laptops. Mm-hmm. You see a lot more movement.
And do you see fewer books in classrooms and more computers, or are there still physical paper printed books?
I think with younger students, you know, you see illustrated books and you see kind of hands-on things. It's not that there are no books, but there is a movement toward heavy reliance on apps in the classroom.
We should note that we did invite Google and Microsoft to be part of our conversation. Both companies declined, but that offer still stands, especially because we've heard from quite a few of you with questions about how all this technology affects you in the classroom, including from a high schooler who left this message through our new app, 1A Vox Pop.
My name is Toby. I'm a rising junior at a CPS high school in Chicago. And I'd say that large tech companies severely interact with my learning experience, giving us access to online resources like Google Drive and giving us docs to write with and slides to present to the rest of our class. Chromebooks are numerous in our school. Most teachers use them for activities, as well as Macs for, you know, most of my computer science classes. Google Classroom is also a tool that's commonly used by my teachers for supplying homework assignments and assignments in general, and news and updates for our class.
Toby, thanks very much for chiming in. All the best to you as you start the school year. Jesse Woolley Wilson, let me come to you. Tell us a bit about Dreambox and how it's used in the classroom. I understand that about 3 million students use Dreambox overall, and that part of the software, part of the goal, is to remove the stigma for students who learn differently. Is that right?
That's right. I would say that Dreambox is an adaptive math program for elementary and middle school students. And when I say adaptive, I mean that it looks at how students learn and solve problems and then adapts the lessons, the actual pedagogy, accordingly to allow kids to move through the curriculum at the right speed for them at the right time. So the content doesn't appear to be too difficult or too easy based on what the student needs.
So it kind of, and I'm just guessing, like I take a test, I don't do well, and so the program kind of adapts, slows down a little bit, gives me more time to shore up what I need before I go to the next lesson?
So actually, it's not really about testing. It's really about building a conceptual understanding of mathematics. We really work hard to encourage kids to think deeply about mathematics and to develop critical thinking skills and problem-solving skills, because we think that's what they're going to need to do in the next century. They're going to have to continue to learn how to learn. And we want them not to fear mistakes. We want them to learn that getting something wrong is the first step to getting it right.
Now a good teacher, Jesse, can do the same thing without your program. What is it that Dreambox helps teachers do that they couldn't do on their own?
I'm so glad you said that, because the best teacher in the best resource classroom can't personalize learning for 30 kids moment by moment. And what technology does is support the teacher. There are some technologies that are literally designed to go around the teacher. Dreambox brought teachers in and asked them to work with engineers to actually build something that they would use in their own classrooms. So it was literally built by teachers for teachers. So our goal is not to replace the teacher. Our goal is to augment the teacher and deliver levels of personalization through digitized learning that's not possible live.
Hal, let me come to you. Talk a bit about your organization's mission, particularly as it relates to some of the concerns over how education or how technology may be used in education.
Sure. Technology for Education Consortium is an advocate for greater transparency in the edtech market, which basically means we want people like Principal Elwine to have the same access to information about edtech as we as consumers have about refrigerators. There's a lack of information about what companies do with data. There's a lack of information about what things cost, and there's a lack of information about the effect of these technologies, both in learning and in also how we manage our schools. So we want to make sure that information is clear and available for folks like Principal Elwine and as well as teachers and parents. We also want to make sure information about how schools make decisions and think about technology are available for those tech companies, so those tech companies can make better product and invest in the research needed so that we see the real transformation that we expect when technology enters a domain like the way it has entered medicine.
I should also note, by the way, in the interest of full disclosure, the consortium is funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which also underwrites NPR. Hal, I wonder if there are any independent long-term studies out there that give us some clear understanding of what kind of educational tools, software, et cetera, actually help students learn. Do we have good numbers, or is it still too soon to know?
Unfortunately, it's too soon to know. There are an abundance of research that's been done over the years, both about technology in general and around specific techniques or features, if you will, within technologies. But like most research in sort of early stages, there's a lot of conflicting information. One research paper will show clear impact. Another one will show no impact. Another one, as you mentioned at the top of the show, might show negative impact. So it's yet to really be made clear from the point of view of research, you know, how these technologies can be implemented in the classroom to sort of guarantee success. There's lots of guidance out there for people like Principal Elwine and for other folks in school districts about how to do it. There's not sort of a rock-solid framework or blueprint for how to do it well. That's really still evolving.
Jesse Woolley Wilson, I understand that Harvard and Stanford have done studies on how Dreambox affects learning. Is that right?
That's right. SRI and Harvard's Center for Education Policy Research both found about the same positive impact of Dreambox, with Harvard noting that a student at the 50th percentile who uses Dreambox for just an hour each week will end this school year at the 60th percentile, and a 10 percentile point gain in 1 year with such a small weekly investment of time is extraordinary. I agree that we need to have more transparency. I agree that we have to have rubrics so that we can de-risk decision-making for principals and district administrators. But I want to encourage us to continue to look at what does exist out there that does show that things like Dreambox works.
Jesse, who paid for that study that you just referenced?
Actually, we didn't pay for it. Harvard had funders that paid for it. And I believe there were funders in technology. I'm not exactly sure on that. Maybe Facebook, I think, was a part of that study. But it was an independent study.
Natasha,
we were not involved in that.
Natasha Singer, what do you make of that study?
Well, first of all, I read the study and Sheryl Sandberg of Facebook funded it.
Okay.
And before I talk about the study, I want to say that very few learning apps have rigorous studies. And Dreambox is one of the few that took the risk to do a big study, to allow their product to be studied by others. And that's remarkable. So, you know, Dreambox is standing out from the pack there. However, I did read the study, and what Harvard concluded was that the students in the Dreambox group did a bit better, but it was only a correlation, right? The study said they can't prove that it was Dreambox that improved the math results. They said if the students had good teachers to begin with, it could have been the teachers. And Jesse and I discussed this, and one of the things she said to me was, right, but like we proved that we didn't cause harm. Most apps can't even prove in schools that they're not reducing the outcomes. And so, again, I think that it's remarkable that Dreambox has allowed itself to be studied.
Darren Elwine, how do you make decisions about the right way to use technology in your classrooms? I think it would be easy and tempting for teachers to do basically what they used to do with videos in the VCR, right? You pop one in and you have a day where you can kind of work on your lesson plans in a darkened room with a silent classroom. How do you make sure that your teachers aren't just kind of using this as a way to babysit their class?
You know, I think it's really built at the district level. I mean, when you look at big decisions, that's done administratively with a team and with teacher input, obviously. If you drill down a little bit deeper and you go just into a building setting, I think it's everyone's accountable to each other. And really where we get a lot of our ideas on what we use, it comes through a lot of it is social media. It's looking to see within our professional learning networks on Twitter, for example, who are we following? Okay, well, I see they're using this, and here's how they're using it because they're giving me an artifact or an example. And then we test it out and we look at it and see if and how the kids really gravitate towards it as well.
I have to be skeptical about social media, though. I mean, social media is designed to be influential and viral. So the companies must have some influence on what you're seeing on social media, unless you're also seeing the negative things where some superintendent from another state will go, oh, God, we tried this software. It was terrible. It was a waste of time. Do not waste your time with them. Are you mostly seeing just positive stuff on social media, or do you get a balance of the good and the bad?
No, it's a combination because I think that at least the group that's on Twitter that I can speak to, they're very transparent. And no one wants the other person to go through a hardship or a difficulty like they did. And if there's something that did not go well, they definitely present that on that platform.
Joining us on the phone now is Dr. Cynthia Boyd. She's a parent of three kids who went to public school in Baltimore County. She's a medical doctor at Johns Hopkins with concerns about how technology is used in classrooms. Dr. Boyd, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
What sparked your concern about how tech was being used in your kids' classrooms?
So my kids are pretty spread out in ages, and so, you know, I pay attention and I'm sort of to what was happening. And as the EdTech transformation that Natasha described was kind of rolling out, which in our district began in the youngest kids in first grade with a one-to-one program and then moved up to middle school. As it kind of rolled out to my kids, for my oldest, I was really struck by how much time he was spending on the computer, both at school and for homework, and that the amount of time that he was spending using personalized learning software, Ascend Math, my younger son uses Dreambox, both are very gamified, meaning that there's either video game rewards for answering questions or that they just feel like an arcade, like there's avatars and badges that you learn. And it really did seem like a pretty striking shift to me, and that it was changing the amount of time that my my oldest was spending with, you know, a real human teacher. And I really believe that personal connection and sort of multi-sensory ways of learning are really what really drives the love of learning.
Did you get any sense, Dr. Boyd, that your kids were getting this technology maybe at the expense of hiring another teacher or spending the money on something else? I mean, particularly if there had been data to prove that this tech worked, was that a concern also?
Oh, absolutely. I really wondered how the district was making decisions and making decisions to spend how much money they were spending, particularly given the lack of, you know, rigorous studies. I do believe that there are opportunity costs to technology initiatives. I mean, and for sure in our district, and, you know, class sizes are increasing. You know, 30 kids in an elementary school is far from ideal. You know, the kind of personalization I want is kids in a smaller class size, or more reading specialists for kids that are struggling readers, or more one-on-one assistance for children with learning differences that sort of need someone there supporting them in school in order to be included.
You know, since we've got you on the line, Dr. Boyd, I wonder if you could answer a question from one of our listeners. Jules tweeted, "How about the effects of screen time on the developing child's eyes, attention span, etc.?"
I'm so glad someone brought that up. That was one of my big concerns, was actually really the health effects, and how do we teach kids to use technology as a tool, but safely in ways that protect their health. I think there's a lot of health issues. Hearing when kids are spending time with headphones in order to be able to hear over a noisy classroom is another one. In Maryland this year, a bill was passed that requires the Department of Health and the Department of Education to create best practice guidance for school classrooms, and I'm really excited about it because I think, you know, their kids spend, you know, half their days, most of their day in the classroom. If we worry about health effects outside of the classroom, I think we've got to be thinking about how we use technology safely in the classroom.
That's Dr. Cynthia Boyd, parent of three students in Baltimore County and a medical doctor at Johns Hopkins. Dr. Boyd, thank you for making time for us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm glad you mentioned that law, by the way. Natasha, I did want to ask you more about that new education technology law in Maryland, as well as other efforts to try to get a better grip on what technology is doing in the classroom. That's just ahead on 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting your shortlist of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Our Up First team goes to work while you are sleeping. That way, you wake up to the freshest take on the day's news. It's the 10-minute-ish morning news podcast from NPR. Listen to Up First on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back now to our conversation with Natasha Singer of the New York Times, Hal Friedlander of the Technology for Education Consortium, Jesse Woolley Wilson of Dreambox Learning, and Darren Elwine of Harrisburg South Middle School in South Dakota. Natasha, tell us a bit more about this new education technology law in Maryland and what it aims to do.
Well, partly because of Dr. Boyd and other concerned parents and doctors in Baltimore County and beyond, this law was passed that will require the State Department of Education to come up with some guidelines for the optimal, safe, and healthy use of technology in schools. Because right now, there's no information and no standard. And as you know, outside of the classroom, there's a kind of national worry about iPhones and other devices being addictive, especially for children. And the question is whether there should be some guidelines in schools. Some districts, like Baltimore County, are very, very heavy on technology and push teachers to use apps and devices as much as possible. And others have limited use of technology. But if you think about it, you know, one of the things doctors say, pediatricians, is a child should turn off their device a few hours before bed, because sleep is really important for health and for learning. So we say that if it's a video game. But if it's, you know, a Spanish language game for school, should that be turned off 2 hours before bed also?
Right.
And so there seem to be some common sense things, but there's a lack of evidence. And so now the Maryland Department of Education will have to come up with some guidelines, and that may involve looking at already existing research or doing other research. And it's a national precedent because no other state has passed such a law.
Darren Elwine, have you thought about this for your school, this combination of all the screen time? What do you do in that regard?
Yeah, we've thought about it because we have parents with the same concern. And we try to communicate as well as we can because, again, like I made a point earlier, it shouldn't be, the computer is not the driver of what's taking place. We need to be really cognizant of the people that are involved because education is still about relationships. And a relationship with a computer versus a relationship with your facilitator, teacher, or your peers is still the most important piece. And it comes down to the communication with all the stakeholders within your organization.
Yeah, we did hear from a number of folks about the balance between in-person interaction or human interaction and computer interaction. Dave wrote on our Facebook page, "As a veteran elementary school teacher, 18th year, I've experienced the growth of computer-based learning firsthand. My biggest concern is that children with their noses in their Chromebooks are not experiencing the face-to-face personal interaction that is crucial to learning the social skills that will serve them throughout their lives. If everyone is quote-unquote learning independently, the community of the classroom suffers." However, Aaron tweeted, "Fun tip, Snapchat is the app for students nowadays. I created a Snapchat account for my math classes where students could only view my story. Here, I posted reminders for homework, projects, quizzes and tests, etc. Great participation." Jesse Woolley Wilson, is there a point at which you would counsel people who use Dreambox to turn your program off? Do you believe there are any times when your software is not appropriate as part of a particular classroom moment?
So one of the things we do very intentionally at Dreambox is make sure that teachers, what we call learning guardians, understand the difference between productive struggle and unproductive struggle.
I'm sorry, pause on that 1 second. Learning what?
We call them learning guardians because they're teachers, parents, coaches. There are a lot of learning guardians that wrap their arms around kids to support kids' success.
Okay.
And our design principle is that Dreambox has to be successful by just using it 1 hour each week. Just 1 hour each week. Because we know there are times, and our technology tells us there are times, when the time the student is spending on the system is unproductive. And that's when we bring in the teacher. We've actually spent a lot of time with teachers getting guidance about what they need from Dreambox Learning so that they will get actionable insights that they can use to adapt their live instruction to optimize student performance. So I would say, yes, there are times when a child is struggling when they need that teacher to get them unstuck. And so we'll give a teacher a prompt so that they'll know, you know, among their 30 kids that Jesse needs their attention. And so this is really a partnership between learners and learning guardians. We want to provide agency for students, and we want to provide actionable insights for teachers so that they can do more for each student at scale.
We also heard from a number of you about bridging the digital divide with students. Fran emailed, "I taught 34 years. One of my big concerns is the assumption that all students have access to technology outside of the schools. This is far from true. I've worked with numerous students who do not have computers nor internet. When I mentioned this to a teacher, the response was that the student could go to the public library. The family in question has 7 young children. I wonder how taking them all to the library in the evening would work. Schools need to walk in the shoes of those who struggle and be sure there's an equal playing field." Hal Friedlander, I'd love you to react to Fran's email.
Right. So bridging the digital divide is actually a significant opportunity for bringing technology into the classroom. It's true that school districts and communities need to understand and consider how kids are going to have access to technology after school. And we've all heard terrible stories about kids sitting in parking lots of public libraries or sitting inside or outside McDonald's just so they could have Wi-Fi to do their homework. So obviously that's failing. That's not what we're supposed to do. But we also hear about Principal Elwine School where kids are given iPads that they take home. And we also hear about programs around the country that make broadband or at least basic internet access free or affordable for many homes that couldn't otherwise afford it. So there are a lot of programs that are looking to help bridge the digital divide. One thing that I think is important to consider is that digital access, unlike access to other physical resources, digital access is relatively easy to distribute. And I've heard people speak about, you know, getting to the library as one of the listeners mentioned, getting to the library with 7 kids could be difficult. But if provided with the right resources and the right access, getting those 7 kids online and getting them access to critical and important information so they can learn can be a lot simpler. It's just a matter of making sure the resources are in the right place at the right time.
Well, I wonder also, I'm sorry to cut you short. I know I got to let y'all go shortly, but Natasha, I wonder if we could touch a little bit more on what these companies get out of these relationships. Emily tweeted, "Maybe a little off topic since I am in my 40s and a long way from my elementary years, but I always think about how all my computer labs in high school were all Apple. I have to be honest that for better or worse, it made me an Apple consumer for life so far." Natasha?
I think that that's a really important point, and I think that it gets to the heart of what we're talking about, which is that students in the United States only have one chance at a free public education, and therefore we want them to have the best tools, not the ones that are the most marketed. And so what we're seeing in the schools is the same fight we're seeing for consumers among Google and Apple and Microsoft, only it's a fight to woo the hearts and minds of first and second and third graders to get them to be lifetime customers. And if you are a third grader and you're using Google Docs, the writing program, you're never going to learn Microsoft Word. You're never even going to know what it is. And you know, that may not cause harm, but it causes benefit to Google because then when you're a CEO of a company and making a decision, you're going to say, let's use this product for our entire company. And so there's a huge economic benefit to these tech companies that have a long tail that's not about the few billion they're making selling to schools right now.
Darren Elwine, principal of Harrisburg South Middle School in South Dakota. Jesse Woolley Wilson, chair, CEO, and president of Dreambox Learning. Hal Friedlander, CEO and co-founder of the Technology for Education Consortium. And Natasha Singer, tech reporter for the New York Times. Thank you all very much for joining us. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for your questions and stories. And thanks for listening. This is 1A.